Welcome to the May 15th, 2023 Finance and Administration Committee meeting, and it will now begin. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may alternatively participate remotely by using the toll-free call-in number or the Zoom webinar link provided in the committee packet, which is posted on the SCV Water website. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. For members of the public who are present and would like to comment, please complete and submit a public comment card to the administrator to help expedite the process. To participate in public comment from a computer, tablet, or smartphone, please click the raise hand feature in Zoom or dial *9. When I announce the agenda item on which you wish to speak, when it's your turn to speak, please dial *6 to unmute. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments first from members attending in person and then those attending remotely. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. These will be taken in order hands are raised. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint presentations shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. Any PowerPoint presentation shown at tonight's meeting will be put, you got me repeating myself now. So with that, with Director Gusite here, nice to see you.
Thank you.
So members present tonight, all the members, all the directors are on the committee. So with that, item number one, Pledge of Allegiance. Director Armitage, would you do the honor tonight?
Sure. Please stand, face the flag, put your right hand over your heart, and begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With that, we can move on to item number two, public comments. We'll take in-person public comments first, and then comments from those attending remotely next. These are items that are not on the agenda tonight. Any public comments?
I do not show any public comment at this time.
Any public comments? No. All right, we move on to item number three. Recommend approval of resolution adopting the appropriation of all as yet unappropriated funds for fiscal year 2022 and 3. Rochelle? Ms. Patterson?
Yes. This is an item that happens every year. It's a reoccurring item just to make sure that any revenue we've received from now until the end of the fiscal year can be appropriated to use for any agency expense that we've identified. And so the recommendation is to approve the resolution that's attached in the agenda.
Do you have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
And with that, any questions or discussion for the board members? None. So we, as suggested by Director Colley, will provide this on the consent calendar at the next board meeting. Moving on to item number four, recommend approval of resolution adopting the appropriation limit for fiscal year 2023-24. Ms. Patterson.
So this calculation is, again, limited. It started in 1978-79, and it moves forward each year based on the state's information of per capita income and population. We do that calculation every year to ensure that the property tax, just the 1%, not the state water contract ad valorem tax, but the 1% property tax that we receive is below that GAN limit. And with this calculation this year and the estimate of the property tax, we anticipate we're about $22,284,000 below that appropriations limit. So the recommendation is to approve the attached resolution establishing the appropriations limit for fiscal year 23-24.
Thank you. Any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Or online comment, as they say. Right. Moving to the board of directors. Any questions?
This one for debate on the calendar.
Director Colley, you have a comment? So with that, I think there is a consensus for this to be on the consent item at the board meeting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we get into the meat of finance. With that, we move on to item number five, which is recommend, no, pardon me. We did number five already. Item number six. Oh.
Number four.
My glasses are fogging up, I guess.
Item five.
So this number five is recommend approval of revised agency classification plan, position control, and job descriptions. Ms. Patterson, please.
Okay. So we have a short presentation that goes along with my presentation. So during the budget process, management had identified the need to add several positions, as well as establish several opportunities for career path advancement in the fiscal year 23-24 budget. Those positions were approved by the board of directors in April. It was noted that some of those positions were new to the agency's classification plan, and some of those positions were intended to provide employee growth within the specific job classification series. Staff had engaged CPS HR to perform several small classification and compensation studies in the classification series of SCADA, utility operations, and fleet and warehousing in order to place those positions into the agency's existing classification plan based on the compensation benchmark comparisons. The studies were not completed in time for the classification plan and position control that was approved in April, but they have now been completed, and staff is seeking committee and board approval of a revised classification plan, position and position control, and several job classification descriptions. And also to note, in the years between a major classification and compensation study, these small studies help us meet strategic plan goal F2, which is attract, retain, and train qualified staff. More specifically, F2.1 to complete a study that results in an updated job requirements, job classifications, clear career paths, and appropriate pay levels. Next slide. So providing a ladder for employee growth is crucial for both the individual employee and the agency as a whole. It is the investment that helps foster a positive workplace culture and ensures that the agency has the talent it needs to succeed both now and to the future. As shown in the slide, we identify a few key reasons for providing a career path. One is employee motivation and retention. By providing a defined career path that can increase employee retention by providing for growth and advancement. Also skills development, the ability for an employee to continue to advance their skills so they can be prepared for the next step. Succession planning, preparing our current employees by providing leadership roles so those employees will be able and ready for retirement or separations. and performance management to align employee performance and ensuring that the employee is placed in the appropriate classification and knows what is expected of them to be considered for advancement. Next slide. So our process that we've have already gone through, we had our board approved classification plan on April 4th of 2023. And then these are the revised classifications that we were talking about. So we engaged CPSHR, which is our consultant, to perform these small classification and compensation studies in the SCADA utility operations and fleet and warehousing job series. And then propose an approval of new job classifications, update the classification plan and position control, and review the budget impact. Next slide. I'll just kind of briefly touch on the scope of the study. The consultant reviews the agency's background and materials, including their classification specifications or salary schedules, and any prior survey information that they collect from us and also from our benchmark agencies. And they also look at our organizational chart. The consultant reviews our position. We have a position description questionnaire, or PDQs, that are completed by incumbents, if there is one, and supervisors to compare duties and requirements within the study's classification series. And an examination of job classifications and employee allocations to determine whether current job classifications are appropriate to the type of level and work performed. And then they also research salary data from their respective labor market agencies, including salary schedules, classification specifications, budgets, and position control documents where available. The consultant developed a series of recommendations for the agency's consideration, and the following slide shows a summary of the recommendations in each classification series. So for the SCADA series, the agency currently has a SCADA 1 and a SCADA 2 position on its classification plan. To complete this classification series, a SCADA analyst and a SCADA supervisor position was approved to complete the operational technology department. There are no current impacts for the SCADA analyst, as that position will be filled in the future, but we went ahead and completed that study so we could have that job classification and have it added on our classification plan. The SCADA supervisor position was approved to add to this job family as part of the updated classification plan that was approved by the board of directors in April. The SCADA supervisor position was placed at range 35 of that classification plan pending the completion of the compensation study. So the consultant recommended, based on the market median of the comparator agencies, that the SCADA supervisor be placed at range 36 and not range 35 for an additional annual budget impact in fiscal year 23-24 of $8,469. Next slide. Now, the utility worker series, you've received a lot of extra information for this particular series. So the consultant and department manager made some clarifying changes, some clear distinctions between the 1, the 2, and the 3 to the job classifications, which is why there were revised classifications distributed after the initial packet went out. But we did notice also another edit today. On the utility worker 2 classification, the requirement of treatment 1 certificate was inadvertently left in. That certificate requirement will be removed and the correct version will be included in the board packet. This also aligns with the field services worker classification 1 and 2 based on those certificate requirements. So the agency currently has a utility worker 1, a utility worker 2, a senior utility worker, lead utility worker, and utility supervisor in their job family. The recommendation of this classification series is to add a utility worker 3 at range 28 to provide additional career advancement, to recognize the expertise, and to align the pay ranges of the senior utility worker from range 28 to range 31. And the lead utility worker from range 31 to range 33 to the water systems technician classification series. We will also change the series name from worker, so we'll no longer be utility worker, but to utility operations technician. The additional budget impact for these changes in fiscal year 23-24 is $58,171, and that's primarily due because to eight incumbents in that senior operations technician class. Next slide. For the fleet mechanic series, this is a new classification series for the agency. The recommendation by the consultant is to be consistent with other classification series and benchmarked three positions, a fleet mechanic one, a fleet mechanic two, and a senior fleet mechanic. During the classification plan update, the fleet mechanic was placed at range 30 for budget purposes. Pending the results of the classification and compensation study, one fleet mechanic position was approved in fiscal year 23-24 and one in fiscal year 24-25. The market median shows that range 29 would be a better range for the senior mechanic as opposed to range 30. The ranges for fleet mechanic one will be placed at range 23. Fleet mechanic two will be placed at range 26. There is no budgetary impact to this position change as there are expense offsets. Next slide. The purchasing and warehouse technician has no career growth ladder. As stated previously, a career ladder can be an important tool for an organization to attract, motivate, and retain talented employees while also ensuring that it has the necessary skills and knowledge to remain competitive in its industry. The consultant recommended, based on the compensation from benchmark agencies, to add a purchasing and warehouse technician one at range 21, reclassify the current purchasing and warehouse technicians to a two, and move the senior purchasing and warehouse technician to range 27 from range 25, where it was placed during the budget process. So during the classification plan update, the senior purchasing warehouse technician will have no impact because based on the current range and the new range and the salary where that incumbent may be, there will be no additional changes. But for the two existing purchasing warehouse, two incumbents, there will be a budget impact of $10,633 in fiscal year 23-24. Next slide. So the financial considerations for the fiscal year 23-24 budget impact, this SCADA supervisor was $8,469, and it increases the range from 35 to 36. The senior operations technician is $54,068 and increases from range 28 to range 31. There's eight positions there. The lead operations technician is $4,103, which increases the range from 31 to 33. There's two incumbent positions. The purchasing and warehouse technician is $10,633, which increases the range from 23 to range 24. There's two positions. And the senior purchasing warehouse technician has no budgetary change, but increases the range from 25 to 27. So the net impact to the fiscal year 23-24 budget is $77,273. We currently have vacant and new positions with several active recruitments happening at this time. We expect that not all vacancies will be filled beginning July 1st or at mid-year as expected. These classification changes are estimated to have a net budget impact of $77,000. But we anticipate some savings as we see some delays in recruitment for all the vacant positions. So for example, the water treatment plant supervisor position is a repurposed position and is included in the budget. It is now expected that this position may be a mid-year recruitment as it may take several months for the classification and compensation study to be completed. We also wanted to identify the future reorganizations or reclassifications that are in progress. So there is one study being prepared for the water resource specialist classification series and one for the government affairs analyst. And as noted, the one pending for the water treatment plant supervisor. These positions have been placed into the classification plan for budget purposes, but is noted that a classification and compensation study is required prior to placements. Next slide. I did also want to know that in addition, as retirements and separations occur, opportunities for reorganizations arise. And reorganization is a natural part of a company's life cycle to optimize the structure and commitment to improvements. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend that the Board of Directors approve changes to the agency's classification plan, changes to the agency's position control, and the approved job descriptions for SCADA analysts, SCADA supervisor, utility operations technicians 1 through 3, senior utility operations technician, lead utility operations technician, purchasing and warehouse technicians 1 and 2, senior purchasing and warehouse technician, fleet mechanic 1 and 2, and senior fleet mechanic. And that completes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you, Patterson. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Okay, with that, I'll open up to the board members if there's any questions. Director Colley.
Can we look at slide 6? Thank you. I'm trying to figure out here. So there are 8 people right now that are called senior operations technicians, is that true?
Yes, they're actually called senior utility workers at the moment, but we are asking to change them to operations technicians.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Director Colley, can you turn on your microphone, please? Thank you.
Please, thank you. So, all right. So they are currently on range 28. And we're going to give them 3 steps, right? Those 8 people will get a slightly altered title, and they will have skipped over the technician 3 in their career progression. If this was in place at that, they would presumably be technician 3s, it looks like to me, and would be at range 28. I'm just trying to figure out this seems like a very strange way to give someone a promotion. 8 people are getting a promotion 3 steps or 3 steps in the ranges, right? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. So their existing qualifications or experience that they have, they are a senior utility worker now. So they have the experience and the certifications as we had established in our existing classification plan. And based on the study with their benchmark agencies and the work that they do that closely aligns with the water technician series for internal alignment, they were placed at the same range.
So if I understand this correctly, the classic comp study that was last done misaligned these people by 3 steps, or 3, I guess steps is wrong. What's the right terminology? 3?
Their ranges.
3 ranges. Yeah, 3, okay, 3 ranges. So we have misaligned them by 3 ranges in the past, and now we're giving them that back. Is that what I'm understanding? Is
I'm not sure if they were misaligned in 2020 when we did the study. There were some additions that were added to the job description based on the work that they were currently doing that closely aligns with the water systems technician. So they were doing a little bit more work that was outside of the classification that of the senior water worker classification.
Okay, can somebody tell me how many senior technicians we have lost over the last 3 years? There's 8 currently. Have we lost any because they were paid 3 ranges too low?
I mean, hey, Rochelle, would you like me to chime in?
Sure.
Sure. Hi, Director Colley. Hello, everybody. So I don't believe we've lost any seniors yet. In this department, in the utility worker department, hopefully soon to be the utility operations technician department, we have approximately 30 staff, and we've lost a little more than a third over the last 5 years. About half of those we lost to neighboring departments, our water systems technician department and the treatment plant side. We've also lost a little less than half, or about maybe half of that 12, I think, total we've lost have gone to other agencies. Two of them went to LADWP. One of them, who was an operator, went up to, I think it's Goleta or somewhere in Santa Barbara. So to specifically answer your question, we have not lost any senior utility workers yet, but these crews are crews of five, and they really run as a crew. Whereas the water system side of thing, generally the crews are smaller, and it's generally not operating as a full crew as compared to these. So these actually have, these staff have a little more of that functional supervision responsibilities than some of the other ones. And with the recent retirement of one of our lead operations technicians, we're concerned that if we don't get something like this through, we're going to start seeing more more staff leave. I hope that answers your question. I'd be happy to answer any more too.
Yeah, I think that's very responsive to my question, because the argument that I've gotten in the past is we need to, we're at risk of losing people. And I guess I've heard in the past that when you said LADWP is some of the folks are leaving for there. Is that what you
two? Used? Yeah. Two staff have left recently for LADWP.
Okay. All right. And just as a sort of an aside, this is a very strange way to get data on trying to pick out who's getting promoted in here. And the way the presentation is, it's very difficult to follow. But that, you know, where we're promoting folks and changing titles, hopefully it's more clear in the future. And it might even with the board presentation, it'd be nice to see it in a way that makes more sense to me, at least. But all right, thank you.
Director Goodsight.
Trying to understand. So we did our full study in 2020, you said. Did they go out and resurvey just on these positions for this, or?
This was not a benchmark position.
So they didn't examine it in any detail at that time?
No, not this one.
And not this specifically, but the set that you showed us tonight.
They did the utility operations or utility worker one or two. Mm-hmm. But we did not have a three. Mm-hmm. And it didn't do the whole class.
Okay.
Just one.
So for the what you presented tonight, there was additional work done to supplement the work in 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. And remind me what benchmark agencies we're using. I remember at one point we were doing public agencies and then a few looks at private.
Yeah, we can't never get any information from private.
They just don't ever answer.
they don't provide it. Okay. For this particular one, we added an additional one, which was Palmdale, which was mm-hmm. not part of our benchmark agencies. Mm-hmm. But we have Cucamonga, Las Virgenes, Metropolitan, which I'm not sure has it, Burbank, Irvine, Glendale, Water, LADWP.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
We have 10.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the presentation, Ms. Patterson. Thank you for the input, Mr. Alver. That was interesting to hear and helpful. And just generally, I think the whole idea that you talked about in the presentation about providing opportunities for employee growth is really important for retention and keeping good staff and also attracting new staff when we need to fill those positions. And to extend that line of thinking, you know, it'd be interesting to think about maybe potential savings because of it in avoiding having to go through the hiring process and retraining people. So I just had one question. Is you mentioned surveys as part of the process that the contracting agency mm-hmm. did as part of their kind of data collection process. Did they also have conversations directly with staff, either administrative and or line staff?
For our staff?
Yeah.
Yes, that's part of the PDQs, the position questionnaire. And they do, if we have an incumbent in this position, they do fill that out. They have what percentages that they do of each job, what tools they use, just what they kind of do on a daily basis. And then the supervisors also have a chance to look at that. They can add, they can change. Then it goes to the manager level. They can add, they can change. And then that position questionnaire goes to CPS HR. They look at it, and then they also go to the other agencies or benchmark agencies and try to place what we do into the other agencies, because they may not be the same title, but they'll want to look at it and see if they do the same work, the same qualifications, and the same certificates.
Okay, but that was all questionnaire. Was there any like face-to-face discussion?
They do have, I'm not sure if they had individual interviews with the incumbents, but they definitely did of the managers and supervisors.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me, shall I have Mike Albert, who'd like to speak again?
Yeah, I can answer that too. So when we did the first class and comp of the whole agency, obviously I've felt a bit overwhelmed because there were a lot of different departments on the TDOM section. And I didn't focus as much with this group as I probably should have. So what we did when we went down this path on this one is we actually had several lunches where we sat and discussed with each employee what they did, what they felt they missed last time. Because a lot of these guys don't like to be involved in a process like this. They're a little shy to sit down with somebody, but they actually did interview. So we made a conscious effort to request staff to volunteer to be interviewed. And so I don't know the exact count, but a number of the utility worker 1, 2 seniors, lead and supervisors were interviewed directly as part of it. And I helped them put together their PDQs to make sure it was understandable and it was consistent among the entire group.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think it's really important too, when we can, and it's possible to get that level of detail in interactions like that. And especially, I think, further down you go in the org chart, the better. So thank you for sharing that.
My observation with this is that it does provide, as has been stated already, provide more opportunities for the different classifications that we have. And that's important in, as say, any organization to retain the individuals that have knowledge of the organization. So it's always a tweaking process of these job classifications. It's an evolving process, let's say. I've seen it evolved many times. So with that, any other questions from the board members? Director Colley?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that so as a board member, one of the things we have very little oftentimes ability to directly observe employees, particularly ones that work inside or not here. But in the community, I do see the field folks out in the community a lot. And I just want to say that unlike a lot of government workers out in the field that folks make a lot of jokes about leaning on shovels, I don't see our employees doing that a lot. I will tell you that I am on the lookout constantly to catch somebody driving erratically or irresponsibly or just being not doing a good job. And if I found anybody, I would call the general manager immediately. And in 20 years, I haven't had the opportunity to do that. So I want to say that out of the folks in the field, I feel very good about the job that they do because they can't know when I'm driving by. So I think, yeah, I can support this, at least the utility worker series, on my own personal observations. Thanks.
With this item will be discussed at the board meeting as a full presentation, or is that the consent item by the board meeting? Consent? Any? Director Armitage? Oh, you can go either way. Okay. And Director Crawley?
I personally don't mind because I'm on the committee.
Okay.
I don't think that.
Okay, let's just put it on the consent for now and see what happens. Thank you for the presentation tonight on this item. And we move on to now item six. With that, will be presented by Rochelle again as the recommend receive and filing of the March 2023 and fiscal year 22-23 third quarter financial report.
Right. So this report reviews the financing activities for the quarter and compares the fiscal year 22-23 budget to actual revenues and expenditures for the operating and capital budgets that have been recorded. Next slide. These are also in your packet, just some, you know, highlights from the last quarter. We had a couple of policy updates. We went through our legal documents for our bond issue. We did a reimbursement agreement for the LARC pipeline project, a contract with the meter device management. We also updated the committee on the status of the LEWAP, the low-income program, and then also our accounts receivable balances throughout the quarter. Next slide. So our total revenues, our total water sales year to date through March, shown in blue, were $63.4 million, which is a reduction of 11% compared to the budget of $71.4 million. Actual water sales are lower than budgeted based on conservation efforts, slower growth than projected, and weather conditions. The agency reported that we received 25.78 inches of rainfall in that quarter and 33.86 inches since the beginning of the fiscal year. So overall, the total fiscal year 22-23 total revenues, which including non-operating revenues through March of 23, were $95 million. And we're 12.7, which equates to 13.7 million under budget of the $108 million budget. Next slide. So here's our water sales, but this is in acre feet, not in dollars. So total water produced for retail consumption from January through March of 23 was 7,597 acre feet, comprised of 3,277 acre feet of groundwater and 4,320 acre feet of surface water. Total water sales were 7,402 acre feet, which is a decrease of 12% from the budgeted projection of 9,430 acre feet for the quarter. Year-to-date total water consumption was 40,022 acre feet as compared to the budget projection of 45,384 acre feet. Next slide. This is our water sales revenue by customer class. Our water sales were under budget by 11%, as previously stated, which consists of the following. Our residential water sales, which are in the blue bar, was under budget by 5%. That's $2,028,000. The commercial water sales, which is in orange, was an over budget by 16%, $599,000. Our landscaping irrigation water sales, as shown in yellow, were under budget by 34%, which is $5 million. And other water sales were under budget by about 10%, which equates to about $434,000. The total number of billing connections added through March of 2023 for fiscal year 22-23 was 731 out of the 1,550 projected for the year. Next slide. This is our property tax revenues. This is our 1% money received. The year to date through March was $18,753,000, and pretty darn close to our budget of $18,721,000. Next slide. Our facility retail capacity fees we received year to date through March were $1,600,000. The regional facility capacity fees collected were 1.4, almost 1.5 million, and about 128,000 in retail capacity fees out of a budget of 4.7 million. Next slide. This is just where our fees are received each for the quarter of how many FCFs in each of those major developments. Next slide. Other revenues, we talked about our 1% property tax and our facility capacity fees. So our other revenues are in that green section. Those include grants, reimbursements, sale, leases, rental income, and investment revenues. Those received through March were $11.2 million, approximately 20% under budget of the budget of $14 million. And kind of similar to the FCFs, it's kind of unknown when we will receive grants and reimbursements. So we take our annual budget and we just annualize it divided by 12. Next slide. This is a little bit new slide. This is just our portfolio summary from our investment advisor, Chandler. And we just thought it was a good graphic and it shows a lot of information of where our investments are. So as of March 31st, 2023, the agency has $273 million in cash in short and long-term investments. The agency's investment advisor has invested a large portion of our liquid assets as well as reinvesting when investments mature. The agency's average market to yield maturity is 3.43%. And as of March 2023, the agency has 27.5% invested in the local agency investment fund, which is LAIF. Currently, that's earning 2.83%, 17.8% in the U.S. government, 12% in Federal Home Loan Bank, and the remaining 42.7% in other banks and also other certificates of deposits. The middle graph there is a little bit hard to see, but it shows our maturity ladder. So as noted previously, the agency has 27.5% invested in liquid assets, which is included in the 0 to 3 year bar on the graph. And liquid assets are needed for cash flow purposes and also includes a portion of the state water contract ad valorem tax. Next slide. On our capital improvement program. So the fiscal year 22-23 PAYGO budget for our capital improvement program is $75 million. Of that amount, 21% or $16 million in funds have been expensed. There's also about $6 million in committed costs yet that have not been incurred, but have been requisitioned for. And on the fiscal year 22-23 debt-funded budget for CIP expenditures of $41 million, of that amount, about 27.7% have been expended. That's about $11.6 million, and we have about $4 million of committed costs that haven't been included in this number yet. Next slide.
Can I just ask you while you're there?
Yes.
Sorry, you've been explaining them as they go. Why that seems more behind than we should be for third quarter. What's going on there?
Yeah, it is a little bit behind. We did say that we were going to roll over about $38 million from the current year to next year. We're a little bit behind that, but we'll see in the next, in April, May, or June. I know there has been, our chief engineer said he's been approving quite a few project POs, so hopefully we'll get to that number. Things are behind, regulatory supply, they're just behind schedule, but they did plan for that in the next year's budget to roll some of those projects into next year. On the operating expenditures, overall in fiscal year 22-23, our operating expenditures of about $60 million, $59.9 million, through March of 23 were under budget by 13%. 8.8 million. That 13% equates to 8.8 million of the $68.7 million budget. Some of the significant activities, water quality treatment and maintenance was over budget by 16%, which is 1.3 million, primarily due to the treatment plant power costs and regulatory fees. Our water resources was under budget by 25%, which is 1.7 million, primarily due to conservation program expenses being less than expected due to lower program participation, primarily due to all of our wet weather. Source of supply is under budget by 36%, which is 3.3 million. And that's primarily due to our core water supplies. We pay our Buena Vista payment in two payments twice a year, December and June. Next slide. So our debt service, our year-to-date payments of about $33 million was made. Our principal debt outstanding as of March 31st, 2023 is $261 million. That does exclude the Valencia Water Division Acquisition Interfund Loan and some accreted interest from 1999A. Next slide. So our cash position as of March 31st, 2023, we have fully funded reserve balance of $113.9 million or $114 million per the agency policy. Our restricted cash of $104 million, which includes the facility and retail capacity fee funds, state water project fund, and the remaining bond proceeds. And our unrestricted cash of about $55 million to meet the agency's payment obligations, such as operating expenses, including debt service, payroll expenses, insurance, CIP, PAYGO, et cetera. And then the pie chart on the right just shows where all of our reserves are split up. Next slide. Some other items in the finance packet are the statement of revenues and expenses for the month ending of March 2023, and also includes the year to date. Our investment report from Chandler is in there, along with the agency's investment report, our three-month cash flow, debt and cash position, facility capacity fee revenues, some additional graphs, our 10 largest disbursements, that includes the check register for those, credit card register, director stipends, and director reimbursements. Next slide. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend the Board of Directors receive and file the March 2023 monthly and fiscal year 22-23 third quarter financial report. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Patterson. Always very thorough. Thank you. with that, are there any questions from?
No public comment at this time.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. So thank you again for your presentation. I think from the initial highlight slide, it's very obvious that the finance team's been really busy this last quarter. So thank you for everything that you do. I have a couple questions. The first one is on the three-month cash flow projection sheet for May and June. It shows the same amount for communication slash rental as 62,681, but then for July it's reduced down to 44,189, and I just was wondering why it's projected to be reduced.
We are using 100,000 of our communication rentals for our ratepayer assistance program, so that's shown in July.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. And then my second question is. So nationally, there's a lot of discussion and speculation around what happens if the debt ceiling isn't increased by the deadline. And so I'm wondering if there's been thought given to how that would impact the agency if that scenario plays out.
I'm not sure exactly what would happen to us. I know maybe have some issues with our WIFIA financing that we're trying to get. But in the short term, I'm not sure that it would affect the agency as a whole.
Thank you.
Director, Vice President Gusay.
I enjoyed the summary. I thought it's a good snapshot.
and to catch us up and see where we're at. So I like getting the quarterly summary in your slides.
Director Colley.
Just a real quick comment. I just want to make sure, at least from my perspective, being behind on spending money is not a metric that's, I would say, is a negative thing. Okay. So I'm glad I interpret that to say that engineering is being careful and thoughtful and prudent. So I don't want that. And I don't think that comment was intended. I don't think it was intended to be a negative. I just want to make sure that it's not taken as such. Thanks.
No, I'll clarify. It's just continues to amaze me how slow things are coming out of COVID. So I take it. Some of it is that, and just the world is not normal. Mm-hmm. And that is evident with that slide on expense. Just we're not back to normal.
Any other comments or questions? With that, we'll move on to item number, and I thank you again, mm-hmm. and move on to item number 7, which should be presented by Rochelle and Rick. This is to recommend approval of the Proposition 218 notice, ballots, and resolution initiating proceedings to adopt water standby charges for DeSoro Duval development, set a public hearing, and other related matters.
So I'm going to just pass it over to Rick and help him.
Go ahead, Rick.
If there's any questions.
Make sure I am not muted. All right. Thank you, Chair Peterson, and good evening, committee members. I am Rick Vassilopoulos, and I'm actually in the Water Resources Department. But I am going to be here to discuss the initiation of proceedings as they relate to the standby charges for the annexed portion of the Tesoro Del Val development. The standby charge will pay for the development's portion of our BVRRB water that's dedicated to newly annexed areas. Next slide. So for the past 5 years, the developer of the Tesoro project has been paying their carrying costs annually in a lump sum directly to us, as shown in this chart. But according to the annexation agreement that we have between us and Tesoro, once the annexation is deemed to be complete, SCB Water is to prepare a standby charge to formally place these charges onto the county tax roll. Next slide. A little bit of background, a little timeline of how long this project's been going on. So in 2006, CLWA at the time adopted an annexation policy based on basically two underlying principles. One, that new annexations would not impact the cost or reliability of water to existing customers. And two, that in fairness to existing customers, annexing parties would have to pay back taxes to bring them current with all the other customers. In 2007, the agency acquired our BVRRB water, and a portion of which should be dedicated to future annexations. That's the 3,653 acre feet. Then in 2013, we have an annexation agreement with the developer was executed. And then in 2017, there was a third amendment to this agreement that recognized the water demand for the project had been reduced from 500 acre feet to 389 acre feet, basically due to changes in the development scale. Then in November of 2018, the County of Los Angeles adopted the final EIR for the project. And then staff submitted the LAFCO application, annexation application, in October of 2019. And then LAFCO took about a year, over a year to do everything. Bad COVID time, not a lot of people working, at least not in their offices. So it took a little bit of time, but they finally got it done. And then in June in 2021, the certificate of completion for the annexation was received by SCB Water. And then that brings us up to date where we're currently working on this preparation of the standby charge. Next slide, Eric. So prior to the annexation being completed, the developers paid all acquisition and past carrying costs back through 1964 under our deposit and funding agreement that we have with them. We're now in a phase of the project where the developer will still be paying the current carrying costs of their portion of the BVRRB water, but this hopefully will be done through the standby charge on the county tax bills instead of paid directly to us. They will continue to pay this charge until all of the individual lots become occupied and the new homeowners begin paying their normal rates and fees charged to SCV water customers. Next slide, Eric. So the parcel map here shows the 13 parcels that will be affected by the standby charge. In the engineer's report prepared by Reftelis, the total carrying costs get divided between these parcels on a square foot basis. Once the home sites start to be occupied and the HOA landscape area is developed, the square footages of those parcels will start to be deducted from the total square footage shown in this table at the right. These tables show the charges for fiscal year 2023 to 24. But they will be adjusted by the consumer price index on a yearly basis moving forward. Then the standby charges for the remaining square footage of these larger parcels will decrease over the years until build out of the development. Next slide. So this map shows the final lot layout of the development within the annexation areas. Basically all the colored areas will get irrigated. Everything outside will not be irrigated. But then on the right, I show how the individual lot within the development was calculated. There's a standby charge that's calculated for each individual lot. These are the numbers that would be deducted from the total charges as the homes are developed. Next slide. So although this is a Prop 218 process, standby charges follow slightly different rules compared to Proposition 218 process that establishes water rates. First, our board of directors has to adopt a resolution to initiate the proceedings. After that, notices can be sent out to the property owners within the standby charge area. In this case, just the 13 properties that are all owned by Tesoro. The notices need to explain the charges and any annual adjustments, include a ballot for the owners to vote, and they have 45 days to do so. The SCV Water Board would need to hold a public hearing and open the ballots after the 45 days. We also decided to post the engineer's report on SCV Water's website for ease for the owners to take a look at the report. If there's no opposition to the charges, the SCV Water Board of Directors can adopt a second resolution to formally adopt the standby charges and direct staff to forward the charges to the LA County Assessor for processing. Next slide. So our recommendation to the Finance and Administration Committee is for them to recommend the Board of Directors approve the resolution to initiate proceedings to adopt a standby charge for the annexed portion of the Tesoro Del Valle development. Next slide. And I do have Joanna Ginn from BB&K who helped with this, as well as John Wright, who prepared the engineer's report. If you have questions, there's a bunch of people that hopefully can answer them.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Is any public comments?
No public comment at this time.
And Director Colley, go ahead.
So on your timeline, one minor thing that was missing is shortly after we got, we signed the contract for the 11,000 acre feet of water, the Castaic Lake Water Agency Board of Directors voted to eliminate the acquisition of that water for development and explained that pending something new happening, we were going to have the 11,000 acre feet for CLWA's existing customers. I'm concerned here because the way I understood this happening, we were going to be made whole for all of that approximately 400 acre feet of water for the entirety of the contract for that 11,000 acre feet. But now I read the board packet and the presentation as well suggests that we will not recover all of the costs for that 400 acre feet of water. Am I missing something? Because when they when those lots sell, the new homeowner will no longer be paying for that their portion of the 11,000 acre feet. Is that correct?
That is correct. And years ago, like I said, this has been going on for a long time. So years ago, we did bring this to the board of directors, and it seemed to be at the time, I thought it was agreed upon that we were take the direction that once the new homeowners are in their homes, that they'd be treated just like everybody else in the community. So why put that extra tax burden on them? They didn't purchase the, you know, they purchased land, but they didn't know whether it was an annexed property or not. So I think at the time, that was the thinking that, you know, that everyone would be just one big part of the one big happy family, if you want to put it that way. But yes, you are correct that they, after the development is fully developed, we will no longer be receiving any payments for BVRRB water from Tesoro.
Yeah,
if I could just make one clarification,
please.
To that.
Thank you.
If it pleases the chair of the committee.
Steve, you have the podium.
Great. Thank you, Chair Peterson. Yeah, I think the logic as Rick walked through it is right. One clarification I would want to make is that once the customer moves in and owns the home, they do pay because we collect fees for that water through our taxes that are assessed on the homes themselves. So I just want to make that distinction that through our rates and charges and taxes that we currently collect on residential units that are within inside the agency's boundaries pay for that supply currently. So just wanted to put that one point out.
Right. Okay. So I don't dispute that at all. The current customers pay this melded cost of all of the different supplies of water and whatnot. This 400 acre feet of water for this development is specifically, they're not going to receive the molecules of water, but that is their supply that they're bringing, that we offered to sell them to bring to the table as a, to annex. And so it was my understanding that we would be made whole for the water that we are selling the developer. And now I understand that that's changed and the developer is not going to pay for that 400 acre fee that they will get out of some portion of it, depending on when the homeowner moves in. That's not at all what I recall the discussion being. It's not at all in concert with the concept of the existing customers not subsidizing development. To say that those homeowners, the new homeowners, are harmless that argument fails with me, because it's a developer that is annexing in and getting this benefit. Their land without annexing in is worth far, far less than land that's within the boundaries. It's been within the boundaries since Cass State Lake Water Agency was formed. Actually, it was another name before that. So this is not what the board, at least this board member, understood was going to happen. I would like this to be sent back to staff so that they can go and explain to the developer that the deal is that somehow or another we are made whole for 400 acre feet of that water for the life of that contract. Even at that point, they're still getting a great deal because that contract ends in, I don't know how many years, 20 or 30.
2035, I believe.
Okay. So yeah, 20 some odd years from now.
12.
So, wow. Yeah. So anyway, we should be made whole all the way through the end of that contract as a minimum. And I think that, that's what the board, at least this board member understood, was the deal. And I'd like to see this sent back to match what we were told. Thanks.
I'm going to take one more run at it just to make sure we're 100% clear of the process that's going to happen, and maybe it's that we're not being clear on it. So the developer has made the agency whole.
This is going to be
up till today.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. Yes. I'm going to walk through it in steps, hopefully, so that I get each piece of it and see if we find an area that I'm missing it. Okay. So they've paid their past taxes. They've paid the past carrying costs. They've paid the ongoing carrying costs to get us to today. Going forward, they're going to continue to do that through their taxes. Okay, so this tax, the people that are voting, the 13 parcels are not property owners. It is the developer that is voting to tax themselves the same amount going forward until the property is developed. And then that responsibility comes off for that one lot. There'll be an assessment that happens each year that trues up the developer's responsibility to the homeowner's responsibility. And I think the challenge is that if you want to continue the developer's responsibility in that role, you end up starting to double dip on the costs, because the homeowner, the way it's structured right now, the homeowners in the valley pay for that resource and those costs in their entirety. So I just wanted to make sure that maybe that doesn't change the theory of where you're at with it, but that's the logic that I think staff believe that they were given to, once the homeowner moved in, that they were, I think the term of art that was getting thrown around at the time was that they become part of the family. And so at that point, that's when they become part of the family.
Yeah, I don't think that changed my understanding at all. I appreciate the effort.
Fair enough.
But the, you know, we offered to sell this 400 acre feet to the developer. And it makes no difference to me. The developer presumably agreed to pay for that 400 acre feet. And that involves a contract that apparently ends in 2035. And so the developer, you know, whether I will also point out that there are other things which are developers do pass on to homeowners. And if they have a methodology for doing that, I mean, there are Mello-Roos taxes, which developers do all the time, and homeowners are free to buy within a Mello-Roos or not. If there's a mechanism for them to put this on their tax roll, and the homeowner knows and understands that for however many years, 12 years, they're going to be paying increased taxes if that's what they want to do. And their deal with the developer is whatever their deal is. But we should be, at a minimum, made whole for each acre foot that we're selling the developer. And that's, again, that's what I understood the board to be told was going to happen. So that's what I prefer that should happen.
Vice President Gusek, go ahead.
Well, I think I was in a different chair when that agreement was made, right? We were at Newhall when this was going through. So I just have some kind of high level questions, concepts. I really liked Rick's presentation. I thought it was a good summary for those of us that weren't around on this side of the table when the agreement was made. If that comes to the board, just one quick comment, because you said it, but the slide was confusing. On the timeline, the third amendment was a reduction to the approximately 400,000, not an addition. So when this comes to the board, if you could just say that the third amendment like reduced to, instead of, because I was doing the math in my head, reading it, adding it, but yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, I understand that the people voting on this is essentially going to be the developer who's already said it was okay. And then they're going to essentially probably sell off these properties, right, to different builders. And that builder will continue to pay until the homes sell, which realistically 12 years from now, by the time they're built and going and selling, we're going to get real close to that 12 years, in my opinion, as it is. And I just want to clarify one thing you said. You said the word double dip, which is always a scary word. The only people currently paying for this water is Tesoro. Our customers aren't paying for it now, right?
No, our existing ratepayers are paying for it now. Tesoro has made them whole.
Okay,
because so they've paid
putting money into today. Right, paying us back. Okay, yes,
that's how I would walk through that.
So, and that brings me to my second high level thought here. When these homes build, like all our other developments, they're paying some fees per lot, per meter. And that is their buy-in to the whole shebang, water supply, infrastructure, et cetera. So that's where, at that point, they become part of the family. And to charge them more would be double dipping. That's what you're saying.
That's, I think, the logic pathway that we've been designing this around is that we want to, when it transitions to a homeowner that is paying all the normal rates and charges of the agency, that they're not paying in addition to for that.
Yeah. And this amounts to about $400,000 a year for all of these lots. For the few years remaining, I'm not concerned. If somebody wants to look into it more, great. But I'm not worried for the size of the amount, the time it's going to take to get these houses built, the way it'll build, and $400,000 a year spread over those number of lots. I trust the staff that they'll be paying fair rates for those houses, and then it will be, the cost will go away in 2035. So I'm okay with it.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. So thank you for the presentation, Mr. Vassilopoulos, and thank you to both of you, including Ms. Patterson, for answering my many questions, because I wasn't here either. So I was trying to understand the history, and you took time to answer my many questions. So thank you. my main question is this something we can bring the ratepayer advocate in on to also be another set of eyes and to maybe answer some of the questions and concerns that Director Colley has? If that's an option, I think it should be exercised. I think it would be great to have that input additionally. I feel like it's important to get this right, because my understanding is this is the first time we're doing this process and we may be setting precedent. So I think it's worth taking the time to make sure that everybody's comfortable with it. So if I don't know what our time frame is, I know we're trying to meet things that have to get submitted for tax collection purposes. So I don't know what the buffer, if there is a buffer, we have a little bit of time to maybe try to answer questions and help Director Colley possibly feel more comfortable or not. So I'll let you address that.
This is kind of the last opportunity to go through committee, because it then we'll go to the June 6th board meeting to approve the Prop 218 notice, which starts the 45 days. And then it will go to the August 1st board meeting. And all of the paperwork has to be turned into the county by August 8th.
Okay, because from the memo, I think, weren't there two timeframes that we could go on, that if I'm remembering that correctly? Maybe I misinterpreted that.
Yeah, no, we're pretty much at the last point. The one thing, I guess, is what we're trying to get past today is just to start the process. You'll all get to vote at two different points. So the board will then adopt a resolution to start these proceedings, but to actually prepare and finalize the standby charges will be a second resolution. So everyone will have a chance to hear this again, and maybe in a little grander detail, possibly, if it's necessary. But it is two separate items. Maybe Joanna at BBK would know if we have another option, because we have just been charging them, the lump sum for the last 4 years, 5 years. But now that the annexation is done, I don't know legally if we have to do this standby charge or if we could continue to charge them just straight, figure it out internally, which I don't know that we really wanted to do, mainly because once the developer starts selling off lots to even the builders, we don't have agreement with the builders. We do have an agreement with the developer. So once the developer no longer owns those properties, I'm not exactly sure how we would legally be able to get the money from them going the route that we have been doing it.
Thanks, Rick. And so I think there's a little bit of confusion with the water standby charges and also the water rates that the customers will be paid once the properties are fully developed. So the obligation for the water standby charges, again, those are just charges just to make water readily available, is specifically for unimproved lots. So this process that we're going through is just to make sure it conforms with all the constitutional requirements to assess the properties. Right now, with the developer as the property owner, we can go ahead and do that for all 13 parcels pursuant to the annexation agreement. Once those properties are fully developed, the responsibility for the payment of water, for actual consumption and use of water, then transfers over to the homeowners. And so they're paying for actual consumption and use. So they'll be paying their base and their volumetric. And then that way, the other standby charges will slowly kind of drop off based upon the development and sale of the properties. So I didn't know if that helped. I think, the process that's outlined in the annexation agreement does contemplate that The developer will approve the standby charges and the implementation of the standby charges. So this is in alignment with what was contemplated in the annexation agreement. If the committee does decide to move forward and the board does decide to move forward with setting a public hearing for August 1st, that will set the clock, the 45-day clock, for Tesoro essentially to receive the notice that you have in the agenda packet. And they will receive all 13 ballots because they own all 13 parcels. You know, it's unlikely that they would, of course, submit a protest because they've agreed to it in the annexation agreement. But if they don't submit anything, then on August 1st, the board could go ahead and approve a resolution adopting the standby charges. I hope that helps.
Thanks, Joanna.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for that additional information. I just want to say, I think this is a really good example of a policy decision that you're asking a committee or a board to make that could definitely benefit from having greater lead time. I feel like this has kind of landed in our laps at the last minute. and I think we could have benefited from more time. So I guess I'm just asking if, you know, things like this are coming down the pipeline that, you know, some of us don't have history on, and take some learning and some comfort level that perhaps it could be brought to us, or not perhaps, please bring it to us a little earlier.
Okay. Vice President Gusak, go ahead.
Just a brief follow-up with the additional information presented. I think I know that this also came through Water Resources several times, right? Trying to get payments from them?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. We've had to revise their payment structure over the last couple of years, just because of I think it was more of a COVID thing where they were just kind of backed up, right, where they didn't get their ducks, right, in a row.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not misremembering that. So to me, this is also kind of a good deal to have it going on property taxes, because, you know, who knows what happens with the economy or COVID, and to have it on property taxes, and at this time having the people that already agreed to it holding all the ballots is much better for us than them not agreeing to the terms of the annexation contract, selling the properties. Then we have properties in the hands of people that didn't agree to pay, and then it's much harder to have these negotiations on, hey, you really owe us $30,000 for your piece of land, and that'll be just a large waste of administrative time as well. So I think the concept is good. And I also appreciate the detail from BB&K about the additional timing, because what that did remind me of, going through the 218 notice process, and indeed the ratepayer advocate is available to us, and including to the directors. So if anybody has any questions about lining out this double dip or not double dip, and checking past agreements, things like that, the ratepayer advocate is supposed to be available during 218 process and any rate setting process. So there will be time to look at it then. And having gone through the ratepayer advocate process, I know it seems odd that it doesn't start from the beginning with the ratepayer, but it more starts with the public hearing. So the timing matches what we set up to use the ratepayer advocate for, so that resource can still be available and we can still proceed tonight based on my understanding of the process.
I just have one simple question. One simple question. How much has been paid by the developer so far for the, what is it, 385 acre feet of water?
So they've paid, going back to 1964, they've paid about $3.4 million through 2018, and then an additional somewhere between $250,000 and $350,000 for 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. So they're probably in the range of $4.5 million that they've paid so far.
Okay. That's in taxes. Did you answer the question on how much you paid for the water, or is that for the taxes?
That's the carrying costs are in that number as well.
So we didn't have any carrying costs in 1965, 66, 67.
Correct. Well, I was just answering how much total funding that they've expended for the, if it's just for the water, I'd have to look and see, but they have paid the last 5-6 years at around $300,000. So there's $1.8 million in carrying costs that they've paid over the last 6 years. But it will go back to, I think 2006 when we got the BVRV water. So they've paid that as well. I just don't know, had that number in front of me. Okay.
All right. That's kind of simple, but you know, it is a new way of doing things with 218. I have to say, I never heard it done this way before, but it does make sense to me to continue, you know, to have the developer online for this BV water. But I'm comfortable with bringing it to the board, full board, and continue the process. So with that, without any objections, we'll just send it to the board through the schedule that has been proposed by the staff here.
Yeah, clearly there is an objection, right? So
yes, I understand that.
Yeah, okay. I don't want to. Yeah, I would prefer to be made whole for this water, as the board was told. At least my understanding, we were told that we would be made whole for all of the water that allocated to this project, and now that's changed. And so, I would prefer the staff. Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thank you. General Manager. Okay. General Manager Stone.
Yes. While the discussion has been going on, I've been trying to piece together the puzzle of past actions, most of which I've been able to find on our website with a little bit of digging, although one I still need to find because I'm not sure what month it was actually approved by the board. So going back to August 6th of 2019, the board approved an annexation resolution, which included among the many terms and conditions for this project, an entire section called payment by applicant to SCV Water of the following, and it goes through A through J. Among those are past carrying costs pursuant to Section 8 of the annexation agreement, so we need to look at that. Annexation charges and BVRRB costs pursuant to Section 8 of the annexation agreement. Standby charges pursuant to, that's what we're trying to do tonight. They've agreed to pay those pursuant to Sections 8 and 10 of the annexation agreement. Let's see, past BVRRB acquisition and past carrying costs pursuant to Section 13 of the annexation agreement. That was the number Rick was not quite able to total, but at least the last 5 years are $1.8 million. And there's quite a bit more there that they paid, I think. So clearly I tried to figure out, the agreement was, I believe, there's a restated annexation agreement that I can find reference to that was signed in September, I think, of 2017. So that would have been in the waning days of CLWA. Interestingly, I think around that same time we were approving interagency funding agreements for the recycled water system that we no longer have to worry about now because it's all internal. Thank goodness. I would suggest that what we could do is in the interim between now and when it does appear at the board, we can try to further research what those agreements say so that it's clear. And maybe, just maybe, that will satisfy Director Cawley's concern that at least the board did agree to that. That's what I was going to offer up tonight, was at least some more clarity so that before the board vote, there was some additional information.
I'm assuming that, and I appreciate your offering to do the research, and I assume that regardless of what the research reveals, that the full board will be told what that research reveals.
We can do that, yeah.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want to. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
And are we agreeing that we're asking for the ratepayer advocate to be included and available?
You know, the challenge I see with that is the ratepayer advocate getting up to speed on everything and opining on something that's essentially specified in an agreement that this board has adopted and is trying to hold up in its end of. I would be concerned if the ratepayer advocate decided that they didn't like that. It's an agreement that predates the ratepayer advocate.
Mm-hmm. That's good. But in terms of the calculations that are used, that makes sense. And
are we concerned about the calculations? Or are we just concerned that we didn't tag the developer with 100% of the cost? Because that's something we agreed to in this annexation agreement. That's what I'm trying to point out. There's a section in there that spells out what the predecessor board agreed was at a fair term. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I see them as two separate issues.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just not sure we're adding value to have a second consultant look at the numbers when we've hired one to do that. And presumably Tesoro could hire someone to look at it if they wish to. I guess alternatively, if there was time, we have a term in there that we could bill them for all processing costs. Mm-hmm. We would have to add those. I just don't know practically if we can get a ratepayer advocate to look at this in the time that's there.
I was just going to clarify my comment about the ratepayer advocate, that the intent of the committee that got them involved was that the directors could request information from them. I did not mean to have a ratepayer advocate do a whole study or separate study. And I do agree that to bring someone up to speed, again, you know, looking at a $400,000 cost, I'd ballpark $100,000 for them to figure out, maybe not that much, but a chunk of that just to figure out what's going on. So maybe Director Cawley would just be interested in some internal research. But if something was really horrifyingly unsettling and could not be resolved, I think legally he has a right to ask the ratepayer advocate a question or two. I did not mean that we should get a ratepayer advocate study by my comment.
I thought it was wholesale rates. I didn't think retail rates. I did not think it was standby charges on a
unit development. We can research that too.
Okay.
Because I could be wrong.
Pardon me for having a strong opinion. I rarely, and I try not to, but I have a strong opinion that it's a misapplication of the resource.
Right. It's only three things: retail rates, facility capacity fees, and wholesale rates.
So this is a standby charge.
This is a property standby
charge. This is a property charge.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to have the general manager do the research or have assign somebody in staff to do the research.
That will be delegated
to. I appreciate.
Unfortunately for Rick and Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I think we're ready to move on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Captain. Sorry to have to disagree.
That's all right. Item number eight is a revised committee planning calendar. Ms. Patterson?
The big thing that's coming up next month is the POS, the offering documents for the 2023 bonds. There could be a potential conflict in September. Some part of our finance staff is going to a conference, which happens to be the week of the meeting. So we would put, right now we have it pushed to the week after September 25th, I believe it is. But right now we only have one item, which is the finance report on that agenda. So as it gets closer, if nothing else gets added, it could be an opportunity to cancel a meeting and just bring that finance report to the next meeting. But there could be other things for the WIFIA loan financing that may be coming up by September. But so we're leaving it on the calendar for now, but just pushed it a week.
Okay. Any comments from the public?
No public comment at this time.
Comments or questions from the board? Hearing none. We move on to item number nine, request for future agenda items. Hearing none. Any comments from the public?
No comment at this time.
And item 10 is the general report on finance and administration activities by Ms. Patterson.
Just two quick things. Our solar panels that we've been talking about for the last few months, about them being, you know, what percentage at capacity. We're at 100% operational capacity now as of the beginning of May. So hopefully with the weather, if it stays sunny, we'll start tracking a little bit better on our power costs. And then the second thing is on our ratepayer assistance program, we are doing a soft launch tomorrow in English and Spanish on our website. And then there'll be bill stuffers running with the bills from May 24th to June 21st. And then there'll be bill messaging, the message on the bill, from June 7th to June 28th. And we are anticipating to start accepting applications on June 1st. And that's all I had.
No public comment at this time.
Any comments from the board? Questions?
I have a question, if it's, and hopefully if you're not prepared to say so.
Okay.
But I thought the timing was good. I know at Aqua there was a panel that you sat in, and I saw you in there, so I said, okay, I'm going to go to another one on approaches to ratepayer assistance, and I wondered if there was any interesting insights from there.
No.
true Rochelle fashion, get to the point.
No, it was a full gamut of who should pay. You okay, know, so is it the federal, yeah, state, customers, the county, the, yeah, water agency, who should pay for any kind of ratepayer assistance or affordability? Actually was talking with Doreen, our senior financial analyst, earlier that there is people have been doing some affordability studies. And since we're looking, when we did our a scenario or our 10-year forecast, that we're looking at larger increases than we currently have, is to maybe do that affordability study so we can see if an 8% or 10% is that affordable in our area, or what impacts that might have. So that could be kind of an interim, a first approach to before we go out for our cost of service study.
So we're there now. Yeah,
I had it for a while. It was over here the first half of the meeting.
So yeah, there it was. Just it's still up in the air.
Thanks, Rochelle. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yeah, Director Armitage.
Just a comment on the last portion of your report. The fact that staff is turned around so quickly and able to open up applications by June 1st, that's amazing. So Thank you so much for everybody who's worked on that and done the legwork to get that up and running. Appreciate it.
Well, we've come to item number 11, which is adjournment.
Thank you.